Hello and welcome to Pixel Food Podcast, where we talk about tech, design and innovation. My name is Dominic and I'm a chief designer of Pixel Field and one of your two hosts.
And I'm Philip, CEO of Pixel Field. So our today's topic is...
How to pronounce it? Computationalism. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's yeah. Why I wanted you to say that.
Yeah, so Philip, what it is? You sent me the article. Explain for our listeners what computationalism is.
It's not that really hard to understand that. It's kind of philosophy that says that our brain or is like information system, and we can look at our lives as a spreadsheet, basically. And I wanted to talk about that because I found this very interesting, and I was thinking about it when I was considering buying Apple Watch or some kind of fitness band, but I was still hesitating a lot to do that because you said that you are looking towards being able to cut off your life and buy another one.
Yeah. I've mentioned that in the last podcast. That's true. I have to admit, like, I am one of those people that are quite obsessed with performance and that kind of stuff. So this topic really like is close to my heart, I would say. Mm-hmm. But yeah, not with everything, I would say.
Well, when I was thinking about the Apple Watch and I imagined that there is just going to be another device attached to my body, mm-hmm. then I thought that I might end up as you, cutting off my arm in this case, because it just felt really weird. And a lot of my friends and colleagues here at work, they measure a lot of stuff about their lives. Mm-hmm. They measure their calories intake. They measure how many steps they make a day. And I do that too. But I look at that only when I'm like on a vacation and I know I've made enough steps to be able to look at the results. So I was wondering if this actually has like some like beneficial impact on our lives, because mm-hmm. I don't feel that way. And I was really interested what other people have to say about that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that because I think I'm going to be the opposite opinion here a little bit, at least I hope. I have to admit that I don't track so many things in my life. I don't own Apple Watch in the end, even though I have to say I was considering it very seriously. And I, because again, I am super obsessed with like performance and stuff. And I want to be like the best in my job and in the activities I commit to. But I have to say with Apple Watch, I got that feeling that it's actually going to slow me down, because for me, Apple Watch is not a way to get better. It's just like adding distractions to my life. So that's why I in the end said no, and I don't own Apple Watch and I don't want to own it, because I felt like, nah, this is not like exactly what I'm about. I would love something that would like help me, for example, focus, but that's more into like drug and pharma space than a piece of tech that I would attach to my wrist at the moment. Mm-hmm. But just to like answer your like sort of question that you had before is, I, for example, do count my calories intake, but only if I want to achieve some goal. I don't do it every day. I don't do it all the time. I don't stress too much about what I eat. I mean, I sort of know what I'm eating right now and I can count it in my head a little bit because I've been doing it for quite a long time. But basically, I always switch to the mode of like measuring, counting and analyzing my own like performance and stuff when I'm trying to achieve something. When I know that I've been like eating too much and feeling not well, when I know that sort of that my body is like tired and I feel tired and everything, then I go like back to like, oh, what is the issue? And it's probably because of what I eat and how much I eat. So then I start tracking my my calories and I'm trying to get sort of back to the normal state using that tracking and that measurement. And I try to like perfect my intake and my like body performance that way. And I think that's quite interesting and useful, but I get it's not for everyone because it's super easy, and it happened to me before. It's super easy to get really into that state of just like surviving or sort of having everything planned and not really enjoying stuff. And it definitely happened to me before. And I think that's the downside of this philosophy, yeah. Right?
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm worried about. Because if you just reduce your experience or your daily life to little goals that are countable and measurable, mm-hmm. I think it's very effective if you want to achieve something, as you have said. But if you want to just like live your life normally, then it becomes very difficult. And I think it really narrows down your like life experience. And mm-hmm. We've had a client about a year ago, and he was really obsessed with this. And we were creating an app for them that was for people just like him, that they wanted to plan every second of their life. They wanted to measure their performance in every single aspect of their life. Mm-hmm. He wanted to measure how much fun he has had on the party, if he went there, and if it was worth it to go there.
Yeah.
And if his sports results or exercises, if it's effective enough, and all this kind of stuff. So he created like this huge information system about his whole life. And I started doing that as well, because I always feel, whenever, it doesn't matter if I wake up at 6 a.m. or 5 a.m. or 4 a.m., I always feel like I should have like started the day earlier, and that I should have done something faster, and that I feel guilty if I...
Yeah, it's addictive, right?
Yeah. If I end up, if I finish my work at, like, I don't know, 5 p.m., then I feel like I maybe should be working till 8 or something like that. Mm-hmm. So I feel a bit guilty sometimes about this. So he kind of infected me with this idea, yeah. And I started doing this as well. So if I showed you my Google Calendar like a year ago, I think, then you would see every 15 minutes planned throughout the whole week. And I've had like really everything there was planned, from like going to gym in the morning, then running, then 20 minutes for lunch, then this. And I really tried, and it was super effective.
Yeah,
it was. I've done so much work. Then when I, at the time, when I looked back on my performance, like 2 months before, and I thought like I was doing nothing really, and I was really lazy. And I managed to do this for several, I think it was like a month or maybe 2 months. Mm-hmm. And so, for example, for the weekend, I had a plan to prepare the plan for the next week. So I went to the office, and for 1 hour, 2 hours, I was like going through my emails, from my notes from the last week, and I prepared the program for the whole next week to come. Mm-hmm. And I don't know why, when exactly I stopped it, but I felt so much relieved when I did.
Yeah.
Because it just, I felt like really like just a robot going to work, doing this stuff, planning, and I absolutely did not feel alive at all. It was really weird experience.
Yeah, I'm laughing here all the time, or like smiling, because I did exactly the same thing last year. This is so funny. Exactly the same system. I think it's called like Block something. I don't know. I don't remember. But I stumbled upon in some, I think, designer I follow on YouTube has recommended it, and I tried it, and it got super addictive. I also had like every minute of my life planned. I started just with like a work week, but after a while, I started planning also my weekends and everything using this method, and it was super effective. It was really cool, and I recommend it for everyone if they want to get something done and they have clear goals in mind. But the thing was that after I achieved what I wanted and got sort of focused and back on track, which was my reason to start doing this, I kept doing it for no reason. And I became, as kind of you did, from what you said, like a victim of it, or like a slave of the system. And, mm-hmm. I know exactly when I stopped, because that was the worst possible scenario. I stopped when I burned out. I think I told you before, right? We talked about it last winter. I had to take a break, and I did nothing for about 2 months or so, because I had like enough. And this was like a part of the problem, because I was, it wasn't that I was trying to like, that I was working too much. That's another problem. If I feel like if my mind tells me, oh, you have to go to work, because this is like what you currently need to be sort of happy, because I write, my work is creative. I really enjoy it and everything. Well, not always, but mostly I do. But this was different. This was more like I was stressed from the like need of being organized, but really organized as a machine. And I felt exactly as you described before, like I'm wasting time every minute that is not planned, and that is not like being, something is not being executed that minute.
Yeah. I also started to be worried that I felt like I'm not being able to improvise or being creative. And I felt if I like continue down this road for maybe a few more months, maybe a year or two, that I would really, really become like blunt and not being able to come up with some idea or deal with some new stress situations or something like that. Because you need like, I think you need some, or at least I do, some space to improvise and, mm-hmm. and some time to think about new ideas and all this stuff. So this was kind of like the maintenance mode.
Yeah.
And you can do a lot of work like that, but you can't, at least I could not come up with like some new idea or something that would help the company or help the project mm-hmm. or help the clients, because you can't really... you can't really plan like I'm going to be creative in this next 10 minutes, right?
Yeah, I completely agree. And this is super interesting, because over the years that I've been working with startups mostly, no matter if it was in-house or if it was one of our clients, very often I encountered that they were like obsessed with data and measuring and performance, which is, don't get me wrong, as you know, something that I preach a lot, and I like to be to make like data-informed decisions in design and everything. But I always told those clients, with like relying only on data and reacting only to data, you can optimize, but you will never invent, you will never innovate, because there is just no space for that in that process. And ironically, I think that's exactly what, even though I was like against it in my work life, that was exactly what happened to my personal life. That I was just in that reactive mode, basically. Because how I sort of booked those blocks in my calendar and planned my week was always reactive to what was like happening. Like, oh yeah, now I have less clients, so I will book some sales sales sessions here. Oh, I have enough clients, then I will do something like that. Oh, I'm feeling like that, so I will book a workout session. And there was no time for being spontaneous and reactive. So yeah, I just realized I'm not really bringing the other opinion to the debate.
No, not so far, but maybe we'll get there.
Yeah, and,
I guess I thought exactly as you're saying right now, because I started to think of myself when I look at back, like if I was not really a human being anymore, but maybe more like some kind of ugly, sweaty device by Atlassian who was just there to finish all the tasks in Jira that needed to be completed in the physical world. And so that was really strange, because it was kind of by the end kind of like out of the body experience for me, because I was just not really thinking about anything, not living my life or whatever. I just finished the work, finished the tasks, and just went home, went to sleep, because I was completely exhausted, of course, after a while in this space. And you said that you work with startups, and I absolutely agree that we need to measure the performance of the individuals and of the company and the project, mm-hmm. and all this kind of stuff. But what I really think is important, not only with like regarding this topic we're talking about, but also if you want to manage any team or project, it's just to use the like the pull method more than just like pushing the information towards people. Mm-hmm. So what I mean here is if you can measure the data without like interrupting the people's life and without them actively having to do something, then I think it's absolutely okay. But what we did last year with this experiment was the other way around, because the tasks were like pushed to us, and we had to follow the plan that was basically dictated by some system.
Yeah.
And I think that's where the problem starts, because that's something that you can't really cope with in the long run.
Yeah, definitely. Going back to like the parallel of how it works in work environment, I always like encourage to basically book more time or allow more time when, for example, designing something, so that there is that time that you need to actually solve kind of the necessary thing that you have to solve, but then to allow you a bit of time to just go nuts and explore and try to also delight. And I think that's the thing we forget about in our lives, especially in this century, but also in work when we are designing products and everything, is that to solve problems and like get to our goals, that's one thing. And it's a very important need that we have to sort of fulfill. But there is also happiness, right? And it doesn't matter if it's me as a designer trying to create a product that conveys happiness to people and has something delightful in it, or if it's just my life where I surprise myself from time to time. And that's really hard if you measure and plan every step of yours. But again, that also doesn't mean that measuring is bad, I think. It's just important to find the balance. Like, for example, how this discussion between us even started was the article you sent me. It's called How Being Human Got Reduced to Management on salon.com. It's by Keith A. Spencer. And there is one paragraph that I really, really liked, where he says, he's basically explaining the problem of this phenomenon, and then he says, I was reminded of a brief period as a child when my family had a pet fish. We were instructed by the pet shop clerk to observe the way the fish looked, its size, color, blah, 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 in order how to feed it, clean its tank, and so on. And they basically were told that that's enough. But in reality, the fish lived in a really sad, tiny bowl where there was only one fake plant in there. And the fish died in a week, even though they did everything they were instructed to. But that's just because even though they realized and they had a feeling the fish can't be happy in there, they didn't listen to those feelings. They just measured what was prescribed to measure, basically. And the same thing can happen, I think, in our lives, and same thing can happen in our work. If we only measure data, and that's literally the only thing we look at, and we never talk to people using our products and stuff, then we're going to miss out on some important signal, important feeling that something is not right. And yeah, inevitably, I think that's going to lead to an end of the product in a better case.
So what I think is interesting about the example with the goldfish is exactly what the philosophy says can be applied to our lives, that it can be measured and optimized. And I think that this is kind of, I think it emerged from our like information technology world, but it's slowly being pushed to other people too. And I don't think that we're even realizing how this is becoming such a spread problem from my point of view, because you measure your not only your body as we talk about till now, but you also measure your success, your friendships, on social media, right? You can like measure how interesting your vacation was depending on the amount of likes you received on Instagram.
Yeah, that's true. I think there is I can see that amongst my friends and even myself, there is a big loss of being spontaneous, because even all those beautiful spontaneous trips we see on influencers or friends' Instagrams are actually planned to look spontaneous. And that's like the sad reality of it. But yeah, I think it's like part of, sorry.
Yeah, if you go for a vacation, I know many people, and I've seen my mom doing this kind of things. And that's scary because she's absolutely different generation, and I would not imagine that this is going to be their problem as well. I was worried for the younger generations that they're going to be growing up in this kind of environment, and it's going to be absolutely natural for them. But that it's going to impact the people that are in their 50s now. That's really, really scary. Because I saw her like arranging the food on her plate to take an Instagram picture. And because we were few weeks back, we were on a holiday together. And that's something I've done it too. I have to admit sometimes when I started, I think my Instagram account, I wanted to take some pictures maybe in the beginning when I was on some holiday that really looked Instagrammable, and when I saw like some food and this kind of stuff, then I really inclined to do it too. I don't do it right now, and I can prove it with my 63 followers on Instagram that I'm not really trying that hard. But or maybe I'm just lousy at it. But I've seen so many people taking pictures just for the sake of Instagram. My ex-girlfriend was just obsessed with the number of the likes that she's going to receive on the on the post, and she was really evaluating their life based on this feedback from the internet, from anonymous people. And that's another kind of measurement, and it's your friendships, right? If you have 500 friends on Facebook, maybe you feel better than if you have just 20. And what you eat, I've seen people that were counting every calorie that they consume because they thought it's going to bring them some kind of like happiness, better life.
Yeah, I think it's important to like dig into why is this phenomenon happening right now. Which obviously it's a huge topic and we can't cover everything during this like podcast, and we're not scientists or psychiatrists, or we don't work in sociology or anything like that, but I think it's like related to a bigger like loss of kind of meaning in life, or that feeling that we have some meaning. And the reason I'm mentioning that is that many popular apps, namely Facebook now is the one I want to talk about in this case, are basically using this to their advantage. I know that Facebook, and I think they got a bit of backlash for that recently, they have like a feature where they tell you how many of your Facebook friends have liked your photos in last year, which obviously that's like a huge number. Or it should be, it's presented in a way that it should be a huge number, but it's a number that's completely meaningless. It doesn't say anything. Like, I mean, I get why you would want to look at your, for example, most popular posts or something, just to get a sense of what your social circle is interested in from you. And that can have some maybe value, arguably, in your life. But this is like, like total number of likes is like completely vanity metric. But the way it was presented on Facebook was like, yeah, it really felt like this is your ultimate goal. This is why you're on Facebook. I mean, Facebook always meant to be to connect with people, but like in a real meaningful way. That is like the vision they had. But then in the product itself, it rewards you for nothing really, for just like chasing some kind of number that doesn't give you any value whatsoever.
But from the Facebook's point of view, it makes absolutely sense, right? Because
of course,
It's the same thing as with the Google Calendar. As you and I decided just to follow its instructions, although all the issues were like filled in by us there. But that's what Facebook does. If you take a look at it from a different perspective, then basically Facebook knows what sells and what's gonna keep their users' attention there. And he just tells you, okay, we need more bikini photos, just do them. Do them for us, and we're gonna make a lot of money on that. And that's why they give you those numbers. And so it's not just like for you. It's not just for fun, really. It's for you to know what's gonna bring the highest value. So in the end, you're just like Facebook employee that's doing all the stuff for free for them because they tell you if you do a bikini photo, it's gonna bring 200 likes, and of course you do it, and they've got the content they need for free from you.
Yeah. Again, it can be useful if you have a control of it and you know what you're doing and it's part of your effort to achieve something. I think it's good. Like, I don't want our listeners to take it like the wrong way. I think like being able to measure and analyze and everything is good, valuable, do it, learn how to do it, but just don't obsess that much with it, because in the end, we can't forget that we are still people and everything we do, including business, is based on human interactions. Like, for example, growth hacking, it's like such an interesting discipline, and I'm interested in it and how to basically maximize your reach and everything. But in the end, even those principles and everything comes back to just the human nature. And I believe, like very much with my full heart, that being human and slowing down sometimes to just feel and think can bring the same results as, or even better results, I have to say better results, than just measuring everything and just reacting to those measurements.
I agree with that. If you can keep it under control and you're not going to base your value or your happiness on this kind of measurements, then I guess it's fine. And sometimes, of course, it's necessary in the business. Absolutely, you have to track a lot of numbers to be able to see where you're going and where the problem might be and so on. But what I think that society right now is inclining to believe that we are the goldfish. And if we measure the data enough and we can pretend to be happy enough and create the right content, then we're going to find the right happiness and the right friendships. And if we have the right calories intake / burn ratio, that we're gonna look great, and everybody's gonna, that basically we're gonna be more valuable and that we're going to be more happy. And I don't think that it's that simple, and that I don't believe that our lives can be this optimized based on just like the few parameters that you put in.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen some people being really miserable from this. I've seen people that were just like prdele extrémně závislí a to pak vystřihnu.
Addicted.
Yeah, addicted. I've seen people that were addicted to measuring their as we talk about it, like likes on Facebook and on Instagram and calories, and it just became crazy. And when I some of those people really reminded me of me when I was trying to follow this like work plan for some time.
Mm-hmm.
So they really had the same. They had the same plan. They had to get up at certain time, and they already knew what they're going to eat because it needed to be perfectly balanced. So they eat it because it's the best for them, right? So they just take their measurement of some proteins and this kind of stuff, and then 5 kilometers, 10 kilometers run because they need to burn it because it's exactly how much they consumed before. And they have to create a few pictures for the Instagram profile and this kind of stuff. And it's mental. If I imagine their lives, then they created like small personal hell for themselves, I think. They put mm-hmm. themselves in the goldfish bowl, basically.
Yeah, yeah. Which is like the sad part about this, because with a fish, that fish didn't choose to be there and live like that. But we do actively choose to live this way to basically just survive and be on the maintenance mode. It's like weird that it also serves as some kind of like flex to people so they can go out and say, look how like organized and happy my life is, when in reality, it's often not. Like if it works for you, then great, keep doing that. But just make sure it really works for you and it's just not just an illusion as it was for me last year. It reminded me of like... Yeah, it reminded me of one like email service that is getting attraction right now in venture capital world, mostly a Superhuman. It's like a super interesting service, and I think they're doing like great job. But it also has some like downfalls, I would say. I've read an article on TechCrunch by Lucas Matney. It's basically Superhuman is like an email service. It's like an email client. But there are many, many things that are tailored to your personal experience. It costs $30 a month to use this. And it basically helps you to curate and kind of optimize, or how to say, manage your emails, basically. And for people that are super busy and getting loads of emails, I mean, they're like early adopters, are venture capital managers of like funds and angel investors and this kind of audience that get like hundreds of pitches every day and many like people asking for collaboration, everything. And I get it, it's hard for them to go through this and filter the important stuff from the less important. But Superhuman has become like this status symbol in Silicon Valley, but also like London and those like startup heavy places. It's currently invite only. It's not in the App Store. You have to basically become their tester. You will get invited to iOS Test Flight, and that way you can download the app to use it. But they have 15,000 users in Test Flight, but another 180,000 users on waitlist that want to pay $30 a month to use this. And the article by Lucas Matney on TechCrunch that I was reading is that basically he used it for half a year. But then he realized he's not getting so many emails or making so much money that he would need to pay so much money for this service. And what it basically became for him was just like a status symbol, so that he has this icon on his iPhone and so that he can tell people about that he's using this. Because one of the things that this like app does, similar as iPhone is doing with their email, like send from iPhone, if you send email from default iPhone email client, yeah. They also added send via Superhuman to their like footer of their email. But the thing is, many people on like iOS do delete it, tech-conscious people. Most people who keep it in there are just people who don't know how to change their signature. But with this app, people actually actively want to keep it there as a kind of way to show that they are super productive. And again, even though this is not necessarily about like measuring stuff, it's about that obsession with productivity and performance that I think has its value when you really know what you are trying to achieve. Again, with Superhuman, if you're super busy getting loads of emails, email is your number one communication tool for work, then go for it. I think it's great. But if you don't, then just don't be obsessed and don't try to be like those people.
Okay, I don't know how to follow on that. But,
yeah, me neither. Also, I've been into dead end with this.
we made some really small research on this topic among our friends and clients and colleagues. And what we found, I don't know if you have seen the results.
No, I haven't.
But most of the people, most of the respondents said that they use some kind of device that is helping them to track their lives. Mm-hmm. And that was more than 60% was said that they have Apple Watch or some kind of fitness band. And the result was interesting. The last question was the most important for me, I think, was if it's bringing them any valuable data and if they think it's making their lives better. Mm-hmm. And most of the people said that they do track their lives, their steps. They do track their... A lot of people track their calories. I was really surprised with that. And a lot of people also track their goals, like in short-term and long-term. Mm-hmm. But about 60% of the people responded that they really don't feel any happier when they receive this data. So it doesn't really make their lives better in any way.
Yeah.
And I feel the same, but there was one guy who said that it's helping him only if he's trying to achieve a certain goal. And I think that was you, right?
Yes, that was me. I said the same thing at the beginning of the podcast. Yeah, it's definitely, as I said, like, I can see the scenarios and I am definitely not against it, systematically against like living life more like a machine. And I'm actually like really passionate about the full potential of our mind and body. And I'm going to say it again, said it in the last podcast. When we figure out the way to make like a body enhancement, I'm the first one who's going to trial it. Like, I'm not sure if it's the right way, but it's how I feel and I would love to do it. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it still needs to serve some goal. Like, for example, with the body enhancements, my goal would be to jump higher. I would love to do parkour, but I would love to...
Since that podcast, I wanted to ask you what's wrong with your leg.
No, it's all right. I'm active. I do sports. I run and everything. And I would love to like do more, but like insanely more. It's not about like... I would not want to take doping to be like a bit faster. But I'm looking forward to a future when we will do like things we couldn't even like think about doing. And that sort of is what like measuring data for me generally is. Like, I do it when there is something in my life that I haven't achieved before that seems difficult to me, and measuring and tracking it and evaluating it helps me to achieve that like 100%. And like, it really makes me better person in that sense. But again, I've learned the hard way to differentiate those important things where I really can achieve something important for me from those things that maybe social media and everything around me tells me that I should be doing, like, for example, eating healthy. Mm-hmm. But in reality, I know myself just by feeling and experience what healthy means for me and how to balance it. And I don't really need a tracker for that.
I wanted to follow on one thing that you've said, and you said that we follow some kind of like recipe for life sometimes, that we mm-hmm. want to fit into some category and do our best there. And I absolutely agree with that. And it was always like that. I think there always were like those templates for life, among which you choose one of them and then you go for it. Of course, there are people that are just like completely on their own, but most of us just choose some way that, and mm-hmm. they already know what it should look like and what the success look like at the end of that way. Mm-hmm. And so I guess nothing has changed in that scenario. But right now we have much more tools to measure how we're really doing on that. So, for example, if you want to be a manager, or if you want to be a model, if you want to be an actor, or whatever, then you always knew which way you had to go and what the steps are. And that if you're, for example, starring in a TV show, that you're probably doing good. But mm-hmm. if you're, I don't know, just stand-up comedian having a gig once in a month, then it's not probably going that well. But right now, with all this technology and all this data that's been gathered, about our lives, you don't really have to like sit down and think about it and do some retrospective, because you see the data live in clear numbers all the time. That you're right now, your number, I don't know, 5026 from. Mm. And that's really what reduces us into numbers again. And that's really what I don't like about it.
Yeah, I semi agree with it that it's still the same, that templates have always been there. Obviously, there has been templates, like last century is famous for that, right? You have to go to school, get a degree, become a doctor, and you'll be successful and everything. But I think the difference is that this has been like a very abstract goal that many people like, and this is just my guess, that many people had. There has been like many ways to actually achieve it. There has been this aspiration and this prescribed scenario, but obviously not everybody will be a doctor and everything. But then with this, with this current situation, I think the problem here is that it's super specific. It doesn't give you the opportunity to think and be creative that much. Because for example, with that old scenario that you have to get a degree and to be successful and everything, if you wanted to measure your success, which obviously people always in some way did, you had to sit down and reflect yourself and figure out what is going well, what is going wrong, and try it and everything. With this obsession of like data and measurements, you don't necessarily have the immediate need to think, because the numbers are there and you see if they are below or above baseline. So you jump to the first conclusion based on that. Like, oh yeah, I haven't, like my running performance has gone down, I need to run more, let's say. But that necessarily doesn't have to be the truth. There might be more reasons for that. And if you don't allow yourself to have a proper time to think about that,
then running might not be in this case the thing you really need, right? Because if you like select those goals and those things that you measured, that then you're automatically going to jump to conclusion that this is what you need to better to make yourself feel better.
Yeah, but that's a good point. Case. That's a good point, actually. I think that's really good thing. Like, if there has been a measurement of health, like in some video game, then I would say, yeah, it's probably a good idea to track this and try to maximize this. But there is no such thing. There are things like, there are just like minor things that in the end might impact your health or might not. No matter if it's the calories, if it's the steps you took or whatever, it's basically, it's like a false positive, right? Just because you've hit your calorie goal and run and like fulfilled your running goals and everything, it doesn't mean that your health went up in a video game.
Exactly. Yeah. You're just going to be focused on like few parameters and not just regarding health, right? But also the friendships and all this kind of stuff that maybe you don't need as much like likes on Facebook, because you can be really happy with just two or three friends that are really close to you. And on the other hand, you might have millions of followers, but still really not being close to anyone. So what does this data says is one thing, but if you just limit yourself to looking at this number, and that's exactly as the same thing as with the work ethic we talk at the beginning. Because if you just follow the plan, you stop being creative. You stop with the retrospective, and you might just forget what's really important for you.
Yeah. I wonder how to wrap up this episode. It's such a broad topic and so interesting topic. I could go on for like hours. But at the same time, I feel like we should stop it here.
Definitely, we will follow up on this again in the future. So I guess thank you, everyone, for listening. If you have any ideas, questions that you want to ask, please let us know in the comment section. And follow us on Instagram, Twitter. What are our accounts there, Dominik?
Yeah, Instagram is just Pixelfield. On Twitter, it's Hello Pixelfield. So please follow us there. And I'm thinking we should leave the form, the research that we've been doing internally. We should maybe leave it up and post it on our social media. It would be great to see like your experience, our listeners, with this, and what is your take on computationalism. I really need to learn how to pronounce that.
We would be really happy to gather more data on this topic. So again, thanks you guys. Thank you guys for listening, and see you next time.
Bye.